alive, cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but there's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show, once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Thank you all for coming back. I'm really happy to be back. Took Monday off. Sorry I didn't give everyone a heads up. I kind of spaced it. But well rested, ready to get back to kicking some establishment ass this week. Man, so many things going on, especially up in North Dakota, continuing with the protest against the pipeline. Native American tribes are coming together in mass, led by the Lakota Sioux, which historically speaking has been one of the more, I don't want to say militant, but the more, a little more of a resistor when it came to the American imperialism, or I don't know what you want to call it, European imperialism, when they come over here and start taking the Native Americans' lands and stuff. The Lakota have always historically been one of the tribes to really put up a lot of resistance, so it's not really surprising to see what's going on up there. And, you know, the good news is that the media is finally covering it a little bit. I saw some headlines about how the protests turned violent and stuff, and, you know, I've been watching some video about what went on over there, and it really does seem like the protesters were provoked. I mean, they sicked dogs on them. I mean, ridiculous stuff going on. And if you just all you gotta do is watch the videos and maybe try to catch the live streams if you want to get some accurate reporting on what's going on there. Because otherwise, the what's the old saying from Malcolm X? If you're not careful, the media will have you hitting the people that are being oppressed, and you know, that's what's attempting to be going on right now over in North Dakota. We're going to talk about that and a bunch of other stuff. We're also going to be talking about, we're also going to be taking callers tonight. I already had to let one caller go, but I just wanted to get the ground rules out there before we start taking a bunch of calls. If you do call in, the number is 718-717-8296. If you call, make sure to mute your microphone, turn off the radio, and you can listen to the show. And when we're ready to talk to you, we'll go to you by your area code. If you are making noise before we go to you or anything like that, we're going to have to drop the call. Also, last week's show on Wednesday, we had some awesome callers. But, you know, if you're going to call and talk with us, you also got to let us talk too. You know, you can't just keep interrupting us and stuff because, you know, we're having a conversation here. You know, we can have debates and stuff too. You know, this is the Anti-Media Radio. We talk about all kinds of stuff, all kinds of different opinions. You know,
some of the callers, you know, you want to talk about some random stuff, that's fine, but, you know, let us talk as well. You know, that's one of the problems we've had in the past. You know, just throwing it out there. Anyway, that being said, let me introduce my panel tonight. I've got my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, on the line. What's up, DB? How you doing tonight?
Not too bad, Nick. Just watching the world fall apart as we know it.
Watching the world burn.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super insulated up here, I'm not going to lie, but it won't last forever, and when it starts hitting you guys, then I get worried because all my friends are back there, so yeah, man, stuff's getting shitty.
Oh, but it's like the phoenix, right? Out of the ashes, something new is rebuilt.
Yes, but of course, the burning part's the sucky part.
Yeah, the burning man, right? We've also got our amazing journalist on the line, Jake Anderson. What's up, dude?
Not much. I've been thinking about how the rich are going to go into space, like in that movie Elysium. When it gets too bad here, they'll just go up into space.
Yeah. Did you see that something recent that Stephen Hawking actually said was about how you know, we need to really advance our space exploration stuff because, you know, in the next 100-200 years, according to what Stephen Hawking has done research and what he thinks is, you know, the world is entering a very we're in a very dangerous stage where there's groups of people that have the ability to destroy the entire biosphere, which is the Earth. And as of right now, there isn't a legitimate, you know, plan B for if that happens. And that's why Stephen Hawking is saying, look, you guys, we need to get off the Earth and colonize, you know, other planets and other places before before these assholes that are fighting for power destroy the whole place, you know. And he was very serious about that. And, you know, Stephen Hawking, everybody's got their critiques of Stephen Hawking, but, you know, he's one of the smartest people on the planet. And when he says stuff like that, I mean, I think it is definitely time to listen. You know, and we talk about this stuff all the time. You know, the rich and the powerful are constantly battling for control over people and resources and fighting to give themselves more power and this, that, and the other. We see it playing out right now in Syria. But, you know, looking back at the major wars that have gone on in the past, it's, you know, a very, very dangerous situation right now with, you know, human beings being the flawed entities that they are, human nature, and, you know, human beings are messed up. You know, something went wrong in evolution, and, you know, human beings are very imperfect. But for the first time in history, we have human beings have the power to really damage the entire world and ruin it for good. And it's something that needs to be taken very, very seriously, especially with all the tensions rising. I mean, there was the G20 meetings going on in China just over the past couple of days, and you know, the American delegation was kind of like confronted on the runway when the plane landed. I mean, Obama's plane.
Did you see that, Nick? Like, China is openly snubbing the U.S. now. I mean, at this point, I think Russia and China realize they have each other's backs. So I don't know if we're trying to bite more than we can possibly ever chew without our entire country and civilization going down in flames, I guess, if that's what they want.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's, you know, pretty true. The U.S. government has bit off a lot more than it could chew, and it's walking around the world acting like it can't be touched and this, that, and the other. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that we can be touched. And, you know, these major nuclear powers like China, Russia, the United States, I mean, you could throw India and maybe Pakistan into the group, of, you know, major players that are nuclear armed and have nuclear weapons. You know, they play this mutually destructive game where if one guy messes up and launches a strike, then the other guy retaliates and everybody dies. And it just gives us more of an urgent cause to really try to fight for peace and to you know, de-escalate this global kind of empire building phenomena that's been going on for, you know, it's been going on for a really long time, but it really has been reshaped after the fall of the Soviet Union and, you know, the rise of China, and now all the stuff that we're doing and our allies are doing in the South China Sea, and, you know, with the TPP and all that, because it's all kind of connected. It's time for us to really put the pressure on and say, you know what, it's time to give up on these empire dreams. It's time to give up on the American hegemony, this idea. I mean, we covered over on the anti-media last week. I didn't get to talk about this on Wednesday. I think we may have posted it on Thursday. But even Brzezinski is coming out. And, you know, those not familiar with Brzezinski, I mean, he's a major, I don't know how to describe him. He's one of these chess masters that is really a neocon when it comes to foreign policy and stuff.
He's legitimately the most powerful man in the world. If you, and I'm sure Jake might be able to back me up on this, if you've read anything about Majestic 12, supposedly he's heading it right now. So just Google Majestic 12, or better yet, don't Google, DuckDuckGo Majestic 12, and you'll see it's beyond black ops. It's the stuff, the $6.5 trillion missing, he's in charge of that.
So, I mean, even Brzezinski, and I don't know how to pronounce his first name.
Zygmunt.
Yeah, I can't say that.
And his daughter's on Morning Joe.
Yeah, his daughter's a MSNBC host. But he's given up. He's giving up. In a recent statement, he's basically giving up on U.S. hegemony around the world, and basically saying, look, you know, we can't. There's no way we're gonna really beat China on this, so we might as well. He's kind of making the case of, let's not go head to head with China. Let's try to be friends with them instead. And you know, this guy, as DB mentioned, he's one of the most he's one of the most well-respected foreign policy advisors in the United States, and he's been advising presidents since since a long time. Eisenhower. Yeah, he's been there
forever. Eisenhower.
And he's an advisor to Obama. He's been an advisor for every president since Eisenhower, you know. And so when this guy talks, people listen. And he's saying, look, let's not force the hand here with China and Russia. Let's try to make amends, and maybe we can coexist. Because that's the only option we have, is coexisting with other superpowers. Because if the U.S. pushes it too hard and bites off, like you said, more than we can chew, man, I mean, it's not going to end well. Maybe, you know, maybe the rich guys will survive. And like Jake said, maybe they'll get, you know, escape into space and go live on Mars or on one of these moons of Venus or something. But for everybody else, we're stuck here, right? We're not rich enough to go buy a ticket off the planet or anything like that. We're stuck here. We got to deal with the consequences that are, you know, taking place because of the people who are supposedly our leaders are deciding right now.
They're just going to go underground. The infrastructure is built. I think we talked about it last time, that $6.5 trillion missing. I mean, that could build an entire civilization underground and connect it with high-speed trains, just like all the conspiracy theories have been saying for years. So $6.5 trillion, just think about that, extrapolated over the last 50 years.
It's a lot of money, and this isn't the first time that the government has lost track or misaccounted for a lot of money. As we'll recall, an anniversary coming up soon here, September 11th of, or was it like September 10th of the year 2001, when Rumsfeld announced that there was trillions missing from the Pentagon budget too.
Well, you mean Operation Able Danger, Nick? The part of the Pentagon that got hit, the accounting department, and they were on the trail of 2.3 trillion missing. I guess I just read now it's up to 8.5 trillion. So there's no end. It's just, how much money can you print? How many $3 million toilets can you install in the Pentagon? You know what I mean?
Jake, what were you going to say?
I don't remember.
It's all right. It's who knows how much money has gone missing through these guys and where it's been spent. I mean, there's no telling, really. Plenty of leads that we can follow up. But, we've been robbed blind, man, for a long time. And, you know, the U.S. public can only bend so far before it breaks. And I think right on the cusp of that, because and you know, this is exactly why a guy like Trump is able to gain the popularity he's gaining, because we're on the brink of giving up, I think, the people of the United States. They've just been put through so much, and yeah, we've still got a huge standard of living advantage over a lot of people around the world, but this country has gone from something that was extremely powerful legitimately to being something that is built on a house of cards. And people, everybody, their bank accounts, everybody in the middle class, everybody knows it, everybody feels it, everybody's wondering how they're going to pay their mortgage, if their house is going to be worth something tomorrow, everybody's wondering if their job is secure, everybody's wondering if a robot's going to take their job, and then how are they going to retire, how are they going to pay them?
And they are, and they're going to have to establish a universal basic income, because half the jobs are going to be lost, and new industries aren't going to pop up quick enough. And if they don't, I mean, the guy we interviewed on here, Zoltan, the Transhumanist Party candidate, he even said if we don't establish a universal basic income, people will straight up like start killing people in the streets. Like, you know, and this is that's coming from a libertarian. You know, when a libertarian starts, you know, endorsing socialist ideas, you know it's got to be pretty bad.
Yeah, and Gary Johnson, I think, has been on record also supporting a universal income as well. So, yeah, you're right. It's very telling.
What do you attach on the back end, like a pay-to-play for reproducing?
I think, well, I don't fully know about that.
You know what I mean? Think, like, if you have so many people that, you know, can't possibly get through a job training of the future, which is going to probably take 10 or 20 years when things get super technical. I mean, you just have a ton of people. What are we going to do with... That's what they're going to think, not me. I'd personally like 20 billion people right now.
I think Zoltan and people like that imagine it as a libertarian dream in which people are basically free to live in leisure because robots are doing everything. And instead of working these back-breaking 50-hour work weeks, humans educate themselves and start, you know, using nanotechnology, using 3D stuff to, you know, start becoming more entrepreneurial and actually, you know, adding to the world. Now, that's a little bit of a utopian vision, but I think that's what they want, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going to be an interesting future. The other thing that is like crushing people right now, and this has been a big topic, especially in the wake of the Bernie Sanders campaign, is the student debt. And that's another thing that is really crushing the spirit of the American working class and the middle class, is all this debt everywhere, man, and all this rising costs of everything and stagnant wages. You know, I just don't know how much longer people are going to put up with it. I mean, one more or two more election cycles. You know, is Trump the last hurrah, the last hope candidate that's going to come around and let everybody down and then, you know, people finally be ready for some real change? Or is it going to be Hillary Clinton with the no change, status quo, let's maintain everything that's been happening for the past 30 years and blame Russia and keep the Cold War going type of, you know, zero hope candidate? I don't know. But something is going to have to give really soon, because I think the American people, judging especially by this election cycle, are really fed up and tired of it. I think the millennial generation is a generation unlike any other that is very, you know, socially accepting and not huge on, you know, going after Russia. They're not huge on, you know, chasing down terrorism all around the world. I mean, sure, they're kind of apathetic to it at the moment. But what they don't understand is that, I guess, part of the reason why the college is, you know, part of this huge debt issue that they're facing, not only with student loans but elsewhere, it has to do with, you know, this global war on terror and all the money being spent on that. I mean, it's just absolutely, absolutely insane. We just covered a story on the anti-media today, a couple stories about some of this ridiculous spending. The U.S. nuclear weapons program is going to cost $85 billion to upgrade. And then the Syrian rebel who has kidnapped a British journalist, shot him twice. In fact, he kidnapped two British journalists, shot one guy twice. The guy still works as a war correspondent for the Times in the UK. He recognized this guy in a picture of, you guessed it, CIA-backed moderate Syrian rebels. So, you know, we're sending money to these quote-unquote moderate Syrian rebels when many, many, many of them are not moderate at all. I mean, this guy literally kidnapped a journalist and shot him twice, and now he's getting funded and armed by you and me. I mean, yeah, it's by the CIA, but, you know, we're paying for it in theory, you know. And so all this ridiculous spending is just going nuts. I mean, the huge naval buildup over in the South China Sea. I mean, what would you do if you were China? I mean, if the world's strongest military had a massive naval buildup right around, all around your coastline, I mean, what would you do? Just, oh, no, they're just doing it to make sure freedom is free. It, you know, freedom stays free and make sure democracy is good. I don't think so. I don't think if you were China, you would be thinking that. If the strongest military in the world was building up around your fucking coastline, you'd be doing probably thinking the same thing. You know, you'd be wanting to build up your military to counterbalance it. And
you'd probably be, you know, wanting that 4,000 tons of gold that you loaned the U.S. right before World War II started and Japan took over Manchuria. You know what I mean? Maybe you'd want, like, I don't know, all the money in the world back.
Yeah, you know, and so when are they going to start calling in their debts? When are they going to start calling in all that money they've, you know, given the U.S. government to do its, you know,
dirt? Maybe they already have, Nick. Maybe that's what this whole thing's about.
Maybe they're trying to get it back. You know, who knows? I'll tell you what, though. These guys are in the U.S. are really, you know, adamant about this pipeline getting built. And, you know, over on Hillary Clinton's website, it says right there that she's going to stand up for Native communities and, you know, honor treaties with Native Americans and the U.S. government, etc. And, you know, she's been nowhere to be seen on this Dakota Access pipeline controversy, which is, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, quickly turning violent. You know, a lot of media reports are saying that it's the Native Americans provoking violence. From what I've seen, the video I've seen, live video, you know, it tells a different story about, you know, provocations going on. Obama was asked about it over in Laos, which is another whole nother geopolitical mess that was created over there in Southeast Asia. I don't know if we've got time to go into that tonight, but, you know, it came sort of around the Vietnam War era. We dropped a bunch of bombs over there. I think it was engineered by Henry Kissinger, if I'm not mistaken, who is imminently about to endorse Hillary Clinton as well. Anyway, Obama was over there promising them, what was it, $80 million to help clean up the bombs. But from what I heard, there's like 100 million undetonated bombs over there laying around, and people step on them all the time. Kids get blown up. Really bad situation over in Laos. But anyway, Obama was over there, and he was asked about the Dakota Access Pipeline, and he had no answer. He played dumb. He just basically, oh, yeah. My administration has done a lot for Native Americans. I don't have any specific answers for you on this Dakota Access thing, but, you know, we do a lot for Native Americans. But he just deflected the question. Clinton is nowhere to be seen. I mean, it kind of tells you that this pipeline is something important that they want built. And it probably has, again, going back to the geopolitical implications, I mean, the U.S. wants to develop its oil industry to the maximum. If you haven't noticed that in the past couple of years, you should take note. I mean, all this right-wing propaganda from Fox News that Obama is anti-oil, it's all nonsense. I mean, the guy, you could call him the fracking president if you wanted to, because that is his legacy. And, you know, look at this. Where was that earthquake, man? Oklahoma? Nebraska? One of these Midwest, you know, Bible Belt countries, they're now experiencing earthquakes, something that they really never had before. Uncoincidentally, they're happening all around these fracking areas where they're injecting water into the ground, cracking the surface of the earth open to extract gases. I guess it's not that big of a surprise to find out that they're causing earthquakes. But the U.S. is really going the extra mile to extract every bit of resources and establish a really strong natural resource, you know, oil, gas, pipelines, and you know, fracking rigs and offshore drilling and all that stuff right now. And, you know, you can't help but wonder why. I mean, we were so comfortable for so long buying our oil from Saudi Arabia and the Middle East. Why is it now that they're really going after this fracking and developing this stuff? You know, I think that it's geopolitically motivated. These guys are getting ready for the case of a big war, that we're going to need all these resources and we won't be able to rely on getting it from the Middle East. I mean, during a time of war, do you really want to be shipping your oil all the way across the ocean and hoping that it gets there? I don't think so. You want to have it done domestically. And so this is what is going on with these pipelines. I mean, these guys are trying to develop this stuff in case there's a big major war and they need all this oil. So
their internal pipelines from Canada to us, and also what they're doing is starting to route hydroelectric. So you're exactly right, Nick. They're making the interior of the country basically as hardened as they can, and they expect a grid shutdown. So if you have money for any alternative way of generating power, now would be the time to look into that.
That's right, man. And, you know, decentralized power is the key. We've mentioned this a lot of times before, but, you know, getting your own power or sourcing it as locally as possible is very much something that's going to help you maintain your freedom as time goes on. So anyway, bunch of other stories that we're going to be talking about. War on cash. You guys read this over on the Anti-Media. Why you should be paying attention to America's quiet war on cash. And this is pretty interesting because, you know, cash, I guess it's kind of old school. Everybody uses their debit cards and stuff, and the cool people are using Bitcoin and things like that. But what people don't realize about cash is that it's a way to maintain anonymity. It's a way that kind of starves the state of tax revenues, because a lot of people that run small businesses that deal in cash don't report their earnings and they don't pay taxes on it. Which I guess, depending on your political philosophy, could be a good thing or a bad thing. I personally think that small businesses not paying Uncle Sam 30% of their income is kind of a good thing. But the government, led by central banks, and it's not only in the U.S., but all around the world, is trying to do away with paper money. They're trying to completely do away with it. They're trying to make everybody have you know, just electronic money, you know, debit card, bank account digits, and stuff that's not actually tangible. And the main thing is that they're using it for economic engineering, right? And they really want to have a handle on all things money, for surveillance, to control it, for when they're going to create new money. I mean, all you got to do, if you do that, you just move a couple decimals over and you create a bunch of money. You don't got to print it out. And, you know, the other thing is that using cash is just a way to protect your privacy, you know. And in the post 9/11 world, you know, the post Patriot Act world, privacy is a scarce thing. It's not easy to be private anymore. You got to really go the extra mile to maintain your privacy and not let, you know, not telegraph to the government or to identity thieves or to whoever it is trying to snoop on you. You know, you got to really go the extra mile to protect yourself. And one of those ways that people like you doing that is by using cash and not using a debit card when you go buy something that you may not want everyone knowing that you're buying, like, I don't know, a gun or, you know, something personal of yours that you don't – maybe you don't want Uncle Sam knowing that you're buying certain things. And everybody should have the right to that kind of privacy because, you know, everybody's got different habits, you know, whether it is with drugs or with – whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, people should have that kind of privacy, but by doing away with cash, the government is able to undermine that privacy, and therefore, you know, it's kind of a way of getting people to censor their activities, and it has ramifications throughout every sector here. But to make a long story short, I mean, central banks want to do away with cash because by doing that, they can really control their stimulus measures. I mean, all of their controlling of interest rates, inflation, and all that stuff. Cash kind of just gets in the way of that stuff. And so, the really interesting article. I mean, It's really informative. I mean, you would have to go and read it because I can't even grasp a lot of the concepts here. Our new writer, Sean Bradley, on economics is phenomenal. I recommend everybody to go over and check out this article, Why You Should Be Paying Attention to America's Quiet War on Cash, because it's just something you need to read, because I can't even explain it because it's that in depth. Here's a story that I really wanted to talk about tonight because I just wanted to get everybody's input on this, and I'm going to take some calls if anybody wants to chime in on this story. The call-in number is 718-717-8296. And this is probably my favorite story of the day. It's written by our senior editor, Carrie Wedler. Title is, A Dog is Reelected Mayor for a Third Term, Proving Politicians Are Useless. Plenty of different ways to look at this story, but a dog named Duke, a 9-year-old Great Pyrenees, is not only is he the first elected mayor of Cormorant, Minnesota, up there by DB, up there by you, but he's now been elected for a third time. And I mean, it's not a huge city or anything. It's a town of over, you know, just over 1,000 people, but it's got a dog as a mayor. I mean, I want you guys to tell me what your implications are for this, because there's so many different ways to look at this. If anybody wants to call in, we'll be taking calls, but I want to go over to DB first because this is like right in your backyard. what do you think about this, man?
There's just a village mentality up here, dude. Like, especially during winter, if you're in a small town of like 1,000 or 500, you just get snowed in and you get stuck. And like, they really couldn't give two shits about who's running anything besides like the actual local like butcher or supermarket or whatever. They don't care about who's running a town. Like, it might as well be a lamppost, and we could just keep putting that out. I mean, we've talked about how AI will probably take even this facet over just because humans are so shitty at it because they're humans.
Lamppost 2016, I think that'd be better than Trump or Clinton. At least I don't think a lamppost would get us in a World War III scenario with China and Russia.
Government will never save your life if you're in an emergency, but your neighbor will.
Great point. And then, you know, to bring that point home, look at what's going on in Baton Rouge. Still, I mean, dude, have you seen the pictures? And there's no media coverage. Where's all the outpouring of support for all these people in Baton Rouge? Tens of thousands of people have lost their homes and lost all of their possessions, their way of life. And, you know, notoriously, these insurance companies are so slow to react, and, you know, they don't have the money to go replace 10,000 houses anyway.
What they're doing, Nick, is they're stalling them by years by making them get permits through local government, through lobbying of the local government. So the local government should be investigated for the fraud they're perpetrating right now against these homeowners who just want to get their homes rebuilt, and they're not being able to because they can't get permits at a local level.
So yeah, I mean, you're right, DB. I mean, when push comes to shove, the government is not gonna save your ass. I mean, in the case of Hurricane Katrina, you know, the local cops tucked tail and they ran. They took off. They left everyone there to, you know, fend for themselves. Now, if people were used to fending for themselves, it probably wouldn't be such a huge deal. But like in the case of this town in Minnesota, Cormorant, I'm guessing, as you said, these people are probably already like relatively self-reliant. They don't need some asshole mayor to come around and tell them what to do and how to keep their yards trimmed and their grass cut and make sure it's green and make, you know, whatever it is that a mayor does. You know, I don't think this town needed it. But I think it does kind of lend some credence to the point that maybe we don't need mayors, and maybe there's a better way of going about this. Jake, I wanted to go to you because DB brought up an interesting point about AI and maybe the use of technology. Maybe it doesn't have to be a dog, but maybe it also doesn't have to be a human. What kind of role do you think could, you know, technology can take as far as filling the role that politicians currently do? Because as DB mentioned, politicians are shit. They're human, and humans are flawed, and we've got issues, and we've got greed, and we're corruptible, and, you know, all the things that we know about politicians. Can technology make a better, you know, give us a better way forward with you know, government?
Well, I don't foresee AI politicians, you know, running for office and winning anytime soon, but I think what can happen, you know, probably in, you know, 20 or 30 years is this, you know, the same thing that's happening right now with the integration of AI into the lawyer's arsenal of tools. So they'll use an artificial intelligence program to basically as an assistant to speed up and, you know, analyze a bunch of things. And I think politicians will end up, as AI advances in 20 or 30 years, it's just going to be, everyone will be using it. It will be ubiquitous. And it, as it continues to grow, it will just simply be easier for them to use AI to, you know, kind of predict scenarios, do risk assessment. You know, they're already trying to use a supercomputer to NASA's, no, the Department of Defense is already trying to use a supercomputer to predict how large groups of people will behave based upon certain social factors. So as AI starts taking that over and, you know, exponentially outgrows our capacity to do anything, really, they will be, for all intents and purposes, I mean, running the show in terms of, you know, they'll tell us, like, is this possible? And, you know, I don't want to say that they're going to end up ruling the world, because I have no idea, but, I mean, they will certainly have a large role in government in 30 or 40 years, there's no doubt.
So, you know, whether it's a dog or whether it's a computer program, these things have the possibility to disrupt the oligarchy, I think. And, you know, the problem is that according to research papers and according to my own anecdotal evidence, and everybody can tell you, you know, politicians are corrupt, they're greedy. We've got an oligarchy in the United States. That's been confirmed by several studies. You know, politicians come into office, they win you over with their rhetoric during election season, but when they get elected, whether they do it intentionally or whether it's just a product of the system that they're placed into, which, you know, who knows about with the case with Obama, you know, we don't know for sure, they end up falling susceptible to the oligarchy, to the machine, to the deep state, whatever you want to call this thing. And, you know, these politicians come in, they do the bidding of the richest people, they do the bidding at the federal government level, they do the bidding of billionaires, of military-industrial contractors, they do the bidding of, you know, the tech giants, and, you know, they do all that stuff. And they ignore the will of the people, you know, and in theory, a politician is supposed to do what's best for the biggest amount of people. If you're a mayor of a town of 1,000 people, you know, if you're faced with the decision, whether it's to help 600 people in your town or whether it's to help one contractor in your town, I mean, the decision should be pretty simple. It's, okay, I'm going to help the 600 people and I'm not going to help the one person. But that's not really the way government has worked historically. I mean, not only in the United States by any means. I mean, government around the world is pretty much corrupt and just as bad. It just so happens the U.S. government has become the strongest one in the world, and so therefore it's the easiest one to criticize. But every government around the world is rife with its own controversies, with its own corruption, its own scandals and violence and, you know, genocide. They've done it all, right? But maybe this is what we need. Maybe we need to elect dogs to run, because at least a dog isn't really corruptible. I mean, what are you going to do with a dog? You know, I mean, a dog is better than a human when it comes to being a politician. I hate to say it, but I've lost all faith in politicians after being privy to this information that I now know, because I read between the lines here with this political stuff. And, you know, hopefully the people listening to this show have, you know, hopefully we've helped people understand the depth of corruption and maybe the inherent issue with this type of government that is, you know, kind of all around the world right now.
The only way we could fix things is if we, like, replaced every politician with a lawyer that went and, like, started repealing all the laws that all the politicians before them put in, on our behalf, and then as our taxes decrease because there'd be less laws, they'd get bonuses. So they'd be constantly, you know, like motivated to just keep repealing bullshit laws that are revenue schemes for the government. Then that would work. But everybody would have to be pretty awake for that to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, this brings us back to this debate on technology. And, you know, we talked about how robots are going to disrupt the, you know, the jobs numbers and the employment and all that stuff. And, you know, of course it's going to have short-term ramifications where people are going to lose their jobs and stuff. But one sector where I do think that, you know, robotics, automation, artificial intelligence would be a great fit, you know, it is in politics. I think that if we had programs that were designed to efficiently make decisions on legislation based on cost and benefits, and, you know, is it going to benefit the most amount of people, I think a computer program would be much more logical and incorruptible than a human being, than a politician, you know, in the United States. Because they're not influenced by all these other political headwinds and stuff. And the only way that you can really influence these computer algorithms would be to hack them, you know, which brings up a whole other set of questions and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I do think that automation should be taking the jobs of politicians. And I think that it would be a much better situation, especially if these machines were programmed to try to prevent death and prevent wars and things like that. I mean, how much different would a situation be in right now if the people run, or if whoever was running the show was not egotistic or greedy or power hungry or, you know, vengeful or whatever it is, you know, all these different humanistic factors come into play that really make these politicians make bad decisions. You know, most of these wars that have cost millions and millions of lives throughout history could have been prevented through logical thinking and through, you know, really doing a cost and benefit analysis and just thinking things out. But humans have shown to be failures in this field, you know, and humans are ingenious and they adapt well and they create awesome things. But the worst thing that we're, you know, we've created has been this theory of government. Because it's not accountable, it's just completely unrepresentative, I guess you could say, in the United States. So, you know, this is one thing that I think is just really interesting. I wanted to pull a quote here from what Carrie, the point she made here at the end of the article, and it's the last paragraph. And again, the title is A Dog is reelected mayor for a third term, proving politicians are useless. The final paragraph here, if individuals can govern themselves at the local level, who's to say they wouldn't survive without a leader at the top of the political hierarchy, meaning the federal government? People across the country are already taking it upon themselves to better their communities without the help of government and their leaders. Between using apps that distribute food to the homeless, establishing community gardens and community Wi-Fi, and taking it upon themselves to pick up their government slack, Americans are learning to rely on themselves rather than their leaders, providing that without government, people make the world go round. And it is a great point. You know, this whole thing with this dog, it's like, you know, a dog's elected mayor. I guess the prevailing thought here by, you know, I don't know, the baby boomer generation, oh my God, there's a dog, the whole city's going to fall apart, you know, but that didn't happen. And, you know, here's the funny thing here, because this dog, his name is Duke, he's a Great Pyrenees, he's not the first animal mayor in the United States. In fact, you know, we've got a very colorful history with electing animals to political office. In fact, there's a cat named Stubbs that currently presides over Talkeetna, Alaska. He's been serving there for years. He's well renowned in the community. That I recently saw an article, a couple mainstream websites covered. I think the Wall Street Journal covered it. But I mean, he's known for like never raising taxes. You know, he never invades on anybody's privacy. He never tells you what to do. He did get into a scuffle with a dog not too long ago, but, you know, that's another story. April the Cow served as mayor of East Sound, Washington from 2011 to 2012. A beer-drinking goat named Clay Henry III served as mayor of Lajitas, Texas until 1992. According to a local resident, he was the best mayor they ever had. you know, and so this isn't an isolated incident here with this dog, you know, but it's kind of a lighthearted take on really the role of government. Do we need a heavy-handed government telling us, you know, what to do and how to live, or don't we? You know, I lean towards the side of the spectrum where I don't think we need all that, because they've proven themselves to be, you know, inefficient, corrupt, and all those other things that come along with heavy-handed governments and centralized bureaucracies and that kind of thing. So I don't know. I just interesting story I wanted to bring up. Dog as a mayor. I wouldn't mind a dog as a mayor of San Diego. Man, our mayor sucks out here. But yeah. What else? Oh, the pipeline company. Going back to this corruption issue, and then tying it back in with this pipeline up in North Dakota, the Dakota Access Pipeline. The company behind it is heavily involved in buying political influence, apparently. They've got their own super PAC. They donated almost $1 million between 2014 and 2016, federal elections. So, you know, this company is going around, and not only are they getting sweetheart deals, I mean, we mentioned this in the last show. They didn't even have an easement set up at the Army Corps of Engineering land, which itself is disputed land that the Native Americans claim is their land anyway. But the Army Corps of Engineers maintains control of that land. They were allowing them to build a pipeline without even having an easement. An easement is an agreement which basically says how you're going to compensate the person whose land you're using to build this pipeline or to build some kind of public work, you know, like a railroad or whatever, but, you know, they're doing it for the pipelines too. So, you know, this company is heavily involved in purchasing political favors through super PACs, lobbying, you know, and the like. So, hold on, we're getting a call. Someone chime in on this. I got to mute up real quick. You guys hear me? Sorry, we're getting a phone call at the office here. So yeah, I mean they're basically, you know, the same old tricks with all these big industries, lobbying officials, getting sweetheart deals, and, you know, now they're using eminent domain to take people's land. To build this pipeline, and, you know, eminent domain is only supposed to be used for, you know, improving, doing a public work, something that's going to benefit the public in general.
Or national security, though, Nick.
Yeah, and
that's what they're doing it under. So you were spot on with what that pipeline's being set up for.
Yeah, and so this is a big issue here. You know, is this political money being used to expedite this pipeline? I would say yes. I mean, why else are they going to be doing, you know, why else are they spending $1 million lobbying the government if it wasn't going to help them expedite this pipeline? So, you know, a bunch of facts are being unearthed now, and I'm expecting more and more stuff coming in the coming days to, you know, shine a light on what's really, you know, what are the real political forces behind this pipeline? Why is it such a big deal? Why are the Lakota really standing up to it? Now, DB, you've brought this up a couple shows ago regarding the water system that is going to be potentially affected by this pipeline and how strategic it is and how many people depend on it. Can you tell us a little bit about that real quick?
Well, it sits over a massive aquifer that basically funnels an ocean underneath Nebraska, Iowa, of the very south part of Minnesota, and then in Illinois, and I believe some of the Dakotas too. And once it gets into that, it kind of just, you know, if you have an oil spill in the ocean or in a river or in a lake, you can clean it. But if it's in an underground ocean, how are you supposed to clean that? And if it's providing the fresh groundwater for 40% of the nation's total crop yield, and something were to, I don't know, poison the water supply, that would pretty much make other areas of even Canada maybe have to divert water down to our farmlands. I mean, it would just be a mess. So the only reason that I can think of, which is why, again, I say you're spot on, the only reason they would risk our farmlands with a pipeline like this is because it's a last resort pipeline to keep oil going to the military if we do get into a major war and the coasts and the oceans become compromised.
Yeah, so, you know, this is a big deal with the water supply for a lot of the country, a lot of the food supply. I mean, if this thing gets built and it does end up damaging the waters, like DB is saying, I mean, think about the food costs going up. 40% of our crops could be affected in the United States, and a bunch of people's drinking water could be affected. And, you know, this is just, it's an environmental disaster waiting to happen. You know, and that's what these guys up there in North Dakota are standing up against. And that's why they deserve our support. And you know what? A bunch of this, all this oil, all these fossil fuels, I mean, it's not really needed anymore. I mean, we're getting to the point where we can be past all that stuff with renewable energies, solar, wind, and all the other different types of alternatives. We don't need this fossil fuel, man, and it's damaging the environment. It's just all around, you know, not good for anything, really, other than providing us quick, cheap energy that is highly centralized and exploited by a handful of companies and profiteered to the rest of us. You know, we all pay exponential prices for this stuff. And, you know, it's just a way of thinking that we need to do away with if we're going to try to, and not even including the climate issues and the pollution in the air and all that. I mean, disregarding all that stuff, there's so many other issues to be, you know, up in arms about with this, that even that, which for some people is the single largest issue of our day, you know, so many reasons to be against this pipeline. I really hope that these people up in North Dakota get the support that they need. I've been noticing that the protest is growing. I mean, now they're bringing out dogs. Did you guys hear about the security company that they got out there? I mean, these are mercenaries, man. Let me pull it up here. I think it's G4S. It's like a British mercenary company. Let me see. Pulling it up here. Here we go. British mercenary company is heading up security out there. They were the ones with the dogs. That were really, you know, they were sicking the dogs on the protesters. Children, women got bit. I mean, not a good situation. G4S, though, very bad reputation in Britain. In fact, we back in January, we covered a story from our United Kingdom correspondent. 5 G4S workers arrested for violent abuse of teens in private youth prison. You know, this is a company, G4S, very big security company. They are also involved with privatizing prisons over in the United Kingdom. So I don't know why this company has been brought in to do security for an American pipeline when, I mean, we've got our own mercenaries over here. You know, maybe it's if something goes down, it's not going to have repercussions here on U.S. soil, so they can blame it on these British dudes that are going to be over here. I'm not sure. But this company has a very, very bad reputation over in the UK, and so they're over here sicking dogs on Native American youth, and so that's not a good sign for the future of what's about to happen over there. And I was looking at, again, back to the videos, the raw video coming from the protest. Man, these people are very callous. These security people, these mercenaries are just standing around waiting to sick dogs and pepper spray people. You know, and so
one class action lawsuit away from those smiles disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this whole thing is all tied up in court right now. Even though while it's in court, you know, certain areas have been stopped from construction, but other areas are, you know, the construction continues, and that's where the standoff was over the weekend, where these dogs were used. There were people, you know, handcuffing themselves to construction equipment. You know, this is becoming a really big deal, and I'm glad it's finally getting the attention it deserves, but it doesn't seem like it's going to remain peaceful for much longer. In fact, violence has already been erupting. Keep in mind that the coverage has been spun in the direction of the Native Americans are the violent ones. I mean, I don't know how anyone could come to that conclusion when it's, you know, their homeland, their sacred lands. I mean, over the weekend they bulldozed through some of the burial grounds and stuff. I really don't see how anyone could believe that that the Native Americans are being the aggressor here, other than the corporate media, which in many ways, in one article that I covered recently, showed how, you know, a lot of these media companies have deep ties to the oil industry. Even MSNBC, which is considered, you know, the standard bearer of liberal media. I mean, MSNBC has deep ties to the fracking industry, the oil industry, and then the expected Fox News, Wall Street Journal have people that write for them that literally are on the payroll of big oil. You know, and so the media companies have a vested interest, many of them have a vested interest in having this pipeline built, so they're going to try to spin the coverage in a way that makes the protesters look bad or like the aggressors, you know, so keep that in mind. Since we haven't really talked about the presidential election, and, you know, this thing is coming down, we're getting pretty close here. It's only, you know, it's November is when the election is. We got 2 months before this thing
happens. So how many years is your exit plan, Nick?
What's that?
How many years is your exit plan? I mean, do you really think we could survive an entire term of one of either of these two?
Oh, man. Well, I got a backup plan where I can, you know, get...
Well, you'll just go to Mexico, right?
Yeah. Fortunately for me, I live close enough to Mexico, and there isn't. Trump hasn't built his wall yet, which, you know, probably will be used to keep people in if he gets his way. You know, luckily that's not built yet, and if I need to, I can make my exit move pretty quick. I'm a 10-minute drive from the border, and I know my way around down there. If I don't need to pass through the legitimate exit, I can find my way around. But you know, this election is really, I don't know, it's evened out a bit. I mean, Trump has really come back to his message, and he's not gaffing everywhere. I mean, it's kind of making the argument that he was trying to lose make a little bit less realistic, although I still think that it could be the case. I mean, we don't know how it's going to play out. We've got WikiLeaks definitely trying to prevent a Hillary Clinton presidency. And I mean, who in their right mind wouldn't? And, you know, that's the thing that really stands out to me this election, is the people that really understand what's going on are more afraid of Hillary Clinton than Donald Trump. The people that are kind of low information, people are like, oh my God, we can't have Trump, so we got to vote for Clinton. Because I guess it's just the depth of understanding there, because the fact of the matter is that Clinton has a track record, has a history, has a tendency, a habit of supporting very, very, very destructive policies, including borderline genocidal acts. In fact, thanks to some of the emails that we had released from the, you know, regarding the Libyan, you know, the overthrow of Libya and Gaddafi and all that, is that Hillary Clinton was informed about some of these Libyan, you know, quote unquote rebels actually committing genocide against black African Libyans, because all of the opposition believed that all the black people were loyal to Gaddafi, so they were actually literally rounding up black people and killing them in Libya. Clinton was made aware of this, and she turned the other way. You know, and so
Yo, here we go through the stereo.